Redacted Media and GhostHat.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Halverson.
All right, and welcome to another podisode of the Film Illogical Society, the countdown show where we are counting down the top 100 films that are comedies, according to the BBC, of all time. All right, with me as usual is Chad Halverson. How are you doing, Chad?
It's snowing again.
It is snowing. It is snowing. In the wonderful world of Wisconsin, it is snowing. But we have a very special guest today, Amy Lynch, and she is not in Wisconsin. So you'll have to share what the weather is doing in your neck of the woods.
Oh.
Well, I'm in New York, and it is not currently snowing, so...
Well, you just had a lot of snow, didn't you?
Yeah, we just got about a foot. I wasn't downstate enough to get 2 feet like everybody else, but we got about a foot on Tuesday, I think it was.
Nice.
Woof.
Nice.
Yeah. used to it. Upstate New York, just like you guys are used to it in Wisconsin.
It happens. Know? It happens. Yep. All right, I am your other host, Chris Scholes, and today... We are going to be reviewing. We are on number 47 of our list counting down. So we are well past the halfway point. We are talking about 1978's Animal House, directed by John Landis. So
the John Landis.
The John Landis. Written by the Harold Ramis. Well, one of the three writers. He's the one that you would know. This was his first film that he wrote.
Yes, yes, it was.
This was the first film. So it was a critical film that launched the careers of many people that I was not aware of. So Amy, when was the last time, before watching it for this podcast, when was the last time you had seen this film?
It's probably been a few years, at least. It's one of those movies that pops up on TV from time to time, and I'll always watch it.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. It's not quite the same version, but it's close enough. What about you, Chad?
This is my first time actually ever seeing it.
Is it really?
Yeah, and as a film buff, like, I've seen clips of, like, the famous... scenes over and over again. Like, it's right. All Bluto stuff, basically. But yeah, this is my first time.
Wow. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Cherry popped.
I'm a little ashamed for you, but...
I'm not, because I didn't really like it.
Oh. Okay, well, let's hold that thought.
Yes.
Because you basically just soiled all Ghostbusters love, too, so...
I know.
All right, well, we're going to ignore Chad for a little bit. Hey, let's just talk to you now. So this film made in 1978, it is the film, anytime there is a college film that has been made since 1978, it is called The Animal House of whatever, or it's The Next Animal House, or it's what, you know, I'm trying to think of all the college comedies, like PCU was the Animal House of whatever. I think American Pie was the Animal House of high school films. It's out there. Like it is like the height of all college films.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a better college fraternity film?
No. Though I do love PCU, I do think that, you know, it owes a lot to Animal House, and
it does.
You know, the original is a classic.
I think you have between this and Revenge of the Nerds as and that again can thank this film a lot for that. But I know they're always trying to come up with the next Animal House.
That'd be kind of hard to do today.
It would. Yeah.
There's a lot in that movie that just would not fly. But
no.
It's still, you know, having grown up with it, you know, it's something I'm used to because I've seen it, you know, 20 times now.
Yeah. Yeah, if not more, just seeing just little bits of it all over the place. Okay, so Chad, what were you going to say?
I was going to say Neighbors is a better frat movie than this movie.
Yeah, okay, sorry. We're going back to shunning Chad. We went from ignoring to shunning. We are stepping it up. Amy, I'm so glad you're here.
I mean, I will say, like, I get, you know, you open up in the beginning where, like, this movie is the next Animal House. Like, I get that lineage. And it's not that it's bad. I just found it disjointed. Like, it felt like a bunch of tiny stories that didn't cohesively, like, mesh together. Like, it felt very ADD to me. With all the different characters and all the different things that were going on. I don't know. It just... For John Landis and Harold Ramis, it felt like a first movie to me. Like, not that it was bad, but that it was just like, all right, it was their first movie. I don't think the script was as tight as it could have been. I mean, I don't know. It had funny moments.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because I will agree. I think it is a little disjointed. So the original film. Or the original script was written by Harold Ramis and Douglas Kinney, so two of the National Lampoon writers. And it was going to be about Charles Manson in high school.
See, I would have watched that movie.
That was the start of it. That was the comedy that they had written, was Charles Manson in high school. And when
I had no idea.
Yeah. When they passed that on to their producer friend... basically said, yeah, this is not going to work. So they brought on another writer, Chris Miller, another Lampoon writer. And so the three of them, they each wrote a third. Then they traded it, redid the third, and then traded it, redid the third. They wrote all their characters based on all the archetypes that they ran into when they were in college. And then this was their very... They had made shorts, but this is the very first film. They had never even actually seen a film script. Because the Universal said, here is a film script, write your thing like this. They had no idea. So it very much was a first time for them. But Chad, remember, without this film, no Ghostbusters.
No, I get it. And I'm not saying, like, I wish this movie would be erased from... public consciousness, but
like you are.
No, I'm not. I'm just, you know, I think one of the cool things about doing this list is we've watched a bunch of things that we normally wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And this is something that I probably should have watched, but never got around to. But I've watched like probably half of all the other frat movies that came out because of this movie. So. Yeah.
And I wonder, I think that's a lot to do with it. I mean, Amy, like you, I've seen this film, you know, most of my life. I've known about this film. I can quote this film. I can see a short scene and I can describe everything going on. You know, but if you haven't seen it at all, but you've seen everything else, it probably isn't. I mean, it's like, you know, who influenced the bands that we listen to today? If you go back like two or three steps, they're probably like, oh, that music is okay, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, is there any scene, Amy, that sticks out to you? Like, is there one or two scenes that really...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of great scenes in this movie. I love the Louie LaLouie scene where they're singing and they're all drunk when they first get initiated. I love the shout scene during the toga party.
Yeah,
but I also, I love all the speeches. I love when Otter does the speeches. They're just great. And I love when Bluto does his speech at the end
towards the end.
And they're just all so great. So those are the scenes I remember the most. Yeah.
What about you, Chad? Any scene you didn't hate?
I mean, I do like the, you know, the big second into third act, you know, hoorah-rah of, like, getting together and did we give up when Germany bombed Pearl Harbor? Like,
exactly.
It, but again, I've seen that scene before, like, hundreds of times.
Yep.
And I've seen the scene of the guy playing guitar on the staircase and Bluto just busting it and apologizing and walking away. Like, I don't know. It just, and maybe it was one of those things, and I've had this happen to me before, where, like, either a film has been hyped up by a group of people or a single person, or a film that's been around for so long, like, I finally get around to it, and I feel, not betrayed, but almost, like, slightly disappointed that it didn't live up to the hype. And I think that's, I would probably be singing a different tune if I watched this movie, you know, when I was younger. I do believe that. Because I was a different person then.
Well, I would agree. Like, if it becomes part of, like yeah, there's some films that I've seen so many times, and they're a connection to my, you know, when I was a kid. And, yeah, this film was on TV a lot in the early days of cable. So it was a very clean version, and that's the version I've seen more, is the clean version. But, yeah, so let's go into John Landis. This was his second major film that he directed. He had just come off the heels of Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, if you're not aware of that movie, it is a funny movie from the 70s, but it is a bunch of short clips. It's not a full film. There's about like a 45-minute to an hour-long film in the middle of it, but a lot of it's just short, like almost commercials or short shows. So it's a really weird kind of format. But he directed, let's see, he directed a lot.
Spies Like Us, Three Amigos.
Yes. Trading Places, which is a film that we've seen already from this list.
Blues Brothers.
That we've seen on this list.
Is he directing the new Coming to America sequel? Because I just saw the preview for that like last week. Doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I don't think so. But yeah, so he did a lot. Three Amigos, which isn't on our list for whatever reason, BBC. But I love it. I love that film. Yeah, so he.
It is hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, he's directed a lot of the films that I think a lot of the comedies that, you know, we all grew up with and grew up loving. You know, just, so this, you know, so Harold Ramis is first, John Landis, who's became a huge director, but this is the first film for Kevin Bacon.
Yes, I knew that. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, so this is the start of the whole, you know, 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
So you're saying before this movie, we had nothing?
Yeah, there was nothing. There was no 3 degrees. Nobody, everyone was like, Kevin Bacon? I don't know him.
What's a movie?
All right, so this film, so Harold Ramis wrote this film wanting a role in it. He wrote the part of, what was it? I'm sorry. There's so many, like, double names in it.
There's a lot of people in this movie.
A lot of people.
Karen Allen.
Yeah. This is her first film as well.
Yep.
Peter Reigert's character in the film.
Donald.
Oh,
Donald Schoenstein. That's the part that he wrote for him. That's Boone.
I would have preferred Harold Ramis. I'm not a big fan of Boone's character, and I love Harold Ramis, so maybe I would have loved it, or I liked it more.
He just looked too old. So John Landis.
They all look pretty old. These are 40-year-old college students.
Yeah, except Pinto was the only one that looked like he belonged.
Yeah.
So the original producers wanted Chevy Chase for Otter, Bill Murray for Boone, But John Landis did not, and Dan Aykroyd to play D-Day. John Landis did not want this to be an SNL film. So he talked Chevy Chase into telling him that this is it, you wouldn't be the lead actor in it. It's a bunch of people in it, so you'll be lost. So he said he passed on it.
Oh, that sounds like a Chevy Chase move.
Yeah. And Dan Aykroyd was threatened to be fired from Saturday Night Live, so he said, I won't do it. And that's basically it. Then they just had John Belushi, who, between this and Blues Brothers, and I think this was his first film, actually. Was this Belushi's first film?
I don't think so.
Like his first... Looks like he was in some short films. 1941 came out.
Yeah, these were all TV movies. Yeah, this is so his this first is feature. This is his
first actual film. So, amazing. Amazing.
And how drunk was he on this set?
He wasn't.
Not on... Really?
Yeah. So, this was the film. And, Amy, I'm not sure if you know this as well, because I know this is something you might know, but... He was, John Landis and others were trying to keep him dry. So they kept him away from, so they housed all the two frats in separate areas, and they encouraged them to party separately. So they would kind of build that familiarity with each other and also the animosity towards the other house. But because John Belushi had to fly back and forth to New York every week from Oregon, he had a, you know, drug problem, they were keeping him dry for it. They were trying to help him out. So, no, he maybe was one of the only ones who wasn't drunk.
That's crazy. I mean, especially knowing him and how he died and his lifestyle, like that... I mean, good for him at the time. Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine how hard that would be, considering, like, you know, again, all the stuff that he did back in the day.
Oh, yeah. So, we're, the shout scene that you had mentioned, Amy, that is Otis Day singing.
Yes.
The iconic scene, everyone knows that, where it makes you want to shout, you throw the hands up, you jump, then you get really quiet. Is that bacon? What do they yell when they're all frying on the floor?
I can't figure that out, no matter how many times I've seen this movie, and I saw it again tonight, and I was like, what are they doing there? Yeah, they say something.
They say something, they start frying. Yeah, so that guy changed his name legally to Otis Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because of the movie, huh?
Yeah, because of this movie.
It was a smart move.
Yeah, because he could tour.
Oh, Dwayne Arthur Jesse was his real name.
Well, not anymore.
Well, I'm just saying, was. I said was.
All right. So let's, I mean, this was, any other actors, let me just ask, yeah, what other actors? We've touched on some of them. I would agree with you, Amy. Boone's character is not the most exciting.
I mean, I hate to say it. I feel like him and Karen Allen, him, Boone and Katie, are like kind of like, there's no point to them in the story.
Thank you.
They don't really add anything for me personally, and I guess Chad as well. yeah, they... I mean, I get it. They wanted a little... actual romance, or maybe the love triangle with, you know, the professor, but I feel like the movie would be fine without them.
if you're gonna cut any two characters, it'd be those two. Not, and I love Karen Allen, but like, you know, you set up this, her sleeping with the professor, and then at the end it's like, alright, well, we're back together anyways, and then the other joke is they get divorced years later. Right. And I feel like all that setup just for that punchline wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. That's my only complaint about the movie. I love the movie. Don't get me wrong. It's but
Mark
were characters I just thought were kind of useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe the original, Charles Manson script had him, you know, maybe it made more sense in that script, but.
Maybe it did.
Chet?
Oh, I probably related with Donald Sutherland's character mostly, but I was going to say Mark Metcalf, like, he's a big deal in Milwaukee. Like, he has a presence here, the guy who played Niedermeyer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he donates to film stuff a lot, and he's still, like, a active member of the local community here, the film community, so,
well,
I mean,
that's cool.
His character sucks in this. I mean, it doesn't suck, it's just, I don't know, I feel like I need to watch this movie again. There's a lot of, you know what I did like, on top of the racism of when they go see Otis in the bar later on.
Yeah, and we'll get to that scene.
But, like, what was I going to say? The scene where Kroger, before he finds out that girl is underage, but at the moment when she passes out and he has the shoulder, Angel's like, hey, you deserve it. Hey, no, you don't. Like, I'm glad at least back in the day, you know, they didn't go through with that, because I feel like that's something that would have been brushed over in 1978. So, kudos to that scene.
I can agree with that. They imply a lot in this movie, but they don't really do a lot.
Yeah.
If you think about it. They imply that these things could have gone on, or, you know, and it's good that he made the right decision. But then, does he make the right decision? Because at the end, he's like, you know, she's like, oh, we got to get married.
Yeah,
to when they see his parents at the homecoming parade.
Yeah, the mayor.
And you got to be like, all I kept saying is, she's 13. What's going on here? That's just so wrong.
When she would go on to play another... in Caddyshack, she was the girl that had the, she got pregnant. Danny got her pregnant.
That's her.
That's
You're
her.
Right.
That's the same actress.
Maggie O'Houlihan.
I did not put that together. Wow. All right.
And that was the last time she ever acted in anything.
Well, you know, Danny left her, so. The one character that always never seemed to fit to me was Hoover.
Like, oh, I like Hoover.
I
they needed a straight guy there,
they,
you know, like a
did.
Like a straight man. You know, he was the one trying to keep everybody together, and he's the one who's trying to, like, keep them in line. And,
I agree.
You know, somebody's got to be the brains of the operation, and that's why he had the highest GPA with 1.6.
I know, man. Maybe it's just the actor just doesn't seem to vibe as much for me. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I do agree his character's needed. With all those other competing, psyches, like, he definitely grounds the group a little bit more.
Yeah. And Bruce McGill. This is one of the first roles I remember seeing him. I remember him in this, and I remember him in Quantum Leap, in the last episode of Quantum Leap ever. He was the bartender.
I do not remember that.
Okay. Well, that's all I remember.
You know what I can say my favorite scene of this movie was?
Ooh,
is when, what's his name? Dorfman. He's in ROTC or whatever, and...
Yeah.
Is that Niedermeyer?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
Niedermeyer's giving him shit on his horse, and the other two come up golfing, and Boone keeps on missing, and then Otter just kind of, like, slices one in. Like, that scene was funny. Like, I felt like the dialogue was good. You could definitely tell some Caddyshack-isms were in that.
Agreed.
And yeah, like, again, I shouldn't come into this conversation saying that, like, I hated this movie. I just... Again, I think I feel like a bill of goods was sold to me, and I didn't really know what to expect, or maybe I, you know, put too much pressure on the film to be the best thing I've ever seen. I would definitely watch it again, but eh.
Yeah, I get it. I think I completely understand. I mean, it's a hype film because people have watched it for so long and it's compared to so much, and so in your mind, even if you're not consciously doing it, it's hyped, and it has to be really, really good in order to for you to come in and say, "Oh my gosh, that was so good." But it's been so ripped off, and it's been scenes have been cut from it that, yeah, you've seen all that.
I feel like because I saw it so long ago, maybe if I saw it now, maybe I wouldn't like it as much.
Mm-hmm.
At the age I am now. But having seen it when I was much younger, and it's more, maybe it's nostalgia that also makes me like it, because I watched it so many times growing up, and everybody watched it, and... You know, you can't hear the song Shout without thinking of that scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, acting it out. So I feel like I like it more because I saw it back then. Like, obviously not when it came out. I was, you know, not old enough to be watching that movie when it came out. But I feel like because I saw it, you know, I was probably a kid. I was probably, you know, way too young to have seen it. Yeah. But...
Yeah,
and then, you know, seeing it so many times over the years.
How? Because they get their revenge at the end, after yep. they're all expelled.
Yep.
How does pulling off those shenanigans get them back into school? In what universe?
Where
Dean Verner...
Yeah.
Yeah, it says they all graduated. Like, it gives them, like, hey, Niedermeyer was a bastard and he was killed by his platoon in Vietnam, like although Niedermeyer wasn't expelled, but like all the other guys that were in
class of
yeah I
kind of feel like the mayor had something to do with that and getting rid of Dean Verner.
Yeah.
So I feel like he got screwed in the end when, you know, he thought that he had kicked them out and that was the end of them, and then they do this whole thing, and I always thought that's how it went. I don't know if they actually explain it or imply it, but
they
don't. Yeah, that's what I always thought, because the mayor is, you know, threatening him throughout the movie.
That's true.
Basically.
Fair point.
I like that
So
theory.
He could have just kicked him to the curb, and then these guys are, you know,
yep.
back on campus.
No repercussions whatsoever.
Well, you know, with double secret probation, you don't write it down.
Yeah,
so there was no evidence that they were in trouble.
Okay. So, all right, I'll shut up. I'll concede.
The one big surprise, I mean, looking at all this, these are a lot of young actors. You have some esteemed actors like John Vernon playing Dean Wormer and stuff like that. But then you have Donald Sutherland popping up in this film.
He was my favorite. For obvious
I used to
reasons.
Find him creepy when I was younger. I thought his character was creepy. The older I get, the more I appreciate Donald Sutherland's character in this movie. I just thought he was like the creepy old professor dude.
But again, like he really wasn't. If we're going back to Karen Allen and Boone, like his character was only there to set up the affair, which again, who gives a shit? So. Retroactively, you could say Donald Sutherland's character's a waste of time too.
Well, he does help.
He implies the college though, because you need a professor in there.
And he also is leading Pinto down, you know, getting him, you know, weed for the first time and blowing his mind.
And believe me, I love Mary Jane as much as the next person, but I felt eh. I mean, I totally lit up during that scene, but eh. not really necessary. It was funny, but in the whole grand scheme of the film, it was one of those other moments where it either slowed it down or it didn't pay off later on. Although we did get to see his butt, so I'll take back everything I just said.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, was he in the movie because he was a, you know, a pretty big actor at that time, and they wanted another big name to draw in people?
Probably. I mean, yeah. he was in MASH. So he was Hawkeye, so I'm sure that helped a bit.
Well, he was in for 3 days of work.
That's about right.
What he did.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And he was given the option of $75,000 for that, or a percentage of the profits.
And what did he do?
Yeah.
Well, he thought this film was just going to be terrible.
So
he took the 75. He would have gotten like 3 to 4 million had he taken a percentage. And this is listed as like one of his favorite films that he's worked in. So he completely messed himself up there. Because he would not be, you know, who knows if Kiefer would be around today if it wasn't for this film. That's all I'm saying. Oh, and we haven't, so we've pretty much avoided John Belushi, but Bluto is the Hallmark character, right? Like, he's...
Yeah.
He's there just to fuck shit up. Like, that's all he's there for. He barely talks, except for at the end.
All he has to do is be on screen, and I laugh. Like, just seeing him, especially when he's sneaking around.
Oh,
yeah. His little run that he does is just hilarious. So every time he does that, I love it.
Breaking the third wall, looking at, raising his eyebrows.
Anytime he's on screen, I just it makes me laugh. So he doesn't even have to say anything.
Does he fall backwards because he's just like, you know, like, oh, he's not paying attention? Or did he have such a big boner?
That's what I always thought.
That's
the boner theory. Yeah.
Just making sure.
I love that scene that he's looking around and there's this big ladder sitting right there.
Just right next to the tree. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I needed.
Of course.
Yeah. Scenes like that are just... But yeah, I mean, that could stand alone as a short comedy vignette. Obviously, you know, it changes the character not knowing the little bit and seems a little bit creepier, but... yeah, John Belushi, just, this is my favorite film of his.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, Blues Brothers, though.
I like Blues Brothers a lot. I like, you know, most of, a lot of what he's done, but this film, I just look at it and I just think he's having more fun with this than any other, you know, the Blues Brothers is a very rigid character that he's playing. This one, I think he could let loose a little bit more.
That's a good point.
But that's me. So not many females in this film.
Yeah, basically Karen Allen. Well, and then Niedermeyer's...
We have Babs.
Girlfriend, Babs.
Yeah, not Niedermeyer, that's...
Sorry. Just too many people in this movie.
You have Mandy Pepperidge and Babs Jensen, one being Greg Marmalade's girlfriend to begin with, and then at the end.
With Bluto.
Well, yeah, she went with Bluto.
After he abducted her.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wait,
did she have a choice?
Another one of those things that they imply, and it's not necessarily a nice thought, but then, you know, it's a comedy. So.
He also became
kidnapping
a senator.
Women. I do not support.
Yeah,
just saying that, putting that out there right now.
Yeah, he became a senator though, so at least there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, out of all the things, that's the one that made the most sense.
Yeah.
And until 1989, you could go to Universal Studios and ask for Babs, and you'd get something free.
Really? Oh, really?
A free tour, free shirt. Or other stuff, but they kind of killed that in 1989, which was probably smart because, you know, word of mouth in 89 was what was getting around, and with the internet now, they wouldn't be making any money.
Huh.
So, yeah, not a lot of females in this, not a lot of, you know, you also had the, you know, Dean Wormer's wife.
Should have called it Sausage House.
And of course we had, yeah, we had the 13-year-old girl. So there were some girls, and of course all the girls. So let's talk about the most uncomfortable scene, where Otter comes up with a plan of looking in the obituaries for a girl who recently died to ask her out on a date at an all-girls school. That scene, I think, even as a young kid, that whole scene, the setup, and then later at the bar, always made me uncomfortable. Like, this doesn't seem like a good thing. Like, even as a little kid, I knew that.
It is probably one of the most desperate attempts I've seen to get a date. Like, I never sunk that low. But, I mean, it's uncomfortable. I think the scene of them actually in the bar where they all, like, obviously they're a fish out of water and it's 1962, but still, like, I feel that was a bit much. Like, being super scared of the other. And, I don't know. I was hoping when all the guys came up and said they wanted to dance with their dates, mm-hmm. I thought it was going to switch and then start being, like, a party again. But, no, it got exacerbated and they just ran out and left their dates. And, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Eh.
That scene did not age well.
It's pretty rough.
It wasn't even probably good in 1978. Even if they were implying it was 1962, you know, it's still, it's kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, put it mildly.
So this was filmed in Eugene, Oregon, at the University of Oregon. And they had to bus black actors.
I was just going to say, they probably had to find them.
Yeah, they had to bus them in from Portland for that scene. Because this film was done in 28 days.
Yeah.
And it's like two, I think it was like, marketing for this film was twice as much as the actual production of the film was.
Which is not, that's not unheard of.
No, especially like, for this type of film, and this was maybe National Lampoon's first film as well.
It's a good question.
But yeah, I don't know. That, I mean, it seems like a very odd thing to, I don't know.
Considering how Landis approached Blues Brothers, where like nobody wanted to show the film, like there were theater chains that would straight up say, "We're not showing your film because it has mostly black actors and musicians in it,
black music, yeah,
and we can't sell that, and we're racist." So it's disappointing to see 2 years or 3 years earlier that type of scene. You know what I mean? Like, because they grew up, like, Landis and Spielberg and all of them, they grew up in the 60s and, you know, more progressive time, you know, way back when, although it doesn't feel like it was that progressive. But, like, it felt disappointing that that type of scene was in there. And, like, it wasn't just that they, you know, walked in and they got a bunch of weird looks and they're just all a bunch of honkies in a black bar. But, like, the joke kept going and going. And, like, they painted these bar patrons as they're the weird ones, even though they're the ones that are, like, in their bar. So, I don't know. Not that that was the main reason why I didn't really like this movie, but it had a good impact on the overall flavor of it for me.
I feel like Landis was probably trying to push things as far as he could and what he thought was funny at the time. And, yeah, I agree that that scene is not great. Mm-hmm. But that's how I always viewed it, is that he was trying to see how far he could push this and what he thought was funny for himself. it doesn't necessarily translate to what I would think is funny. Or, you know, if that makes any sense.
I wonder, too, like, he had just come off his first film. And he had some moderate success with Kentucky Fried Movies. So he may not have felt he could. Like, maybe the producers were keeping a tight leash. I don't know. Because Ivan Reitman was one of the producers. So, yeah, I don't know if that is part of it or not. I mean, maybe.
I already have a love-hate relationship with John Landis because he let three actors die in a set during Twilight Zone. So, I don't know. Like, I like his movies as a person. Meh. He's suspect to me.
Like, I kind of feel exactly the same way.
Yeah. Like, that accident should never have happened on that film set. And yeah. he was the head honcho. He was in charge. Spielberg up and canceled their friendship because of that incident. So, I don't know. With all the different things that kind of surround this movie, that also impacted my overall, you know, judgment of this movie. But, like, I love Blues Brothers. That was a movie I saw when I was younger, and it had an impact on me. But I don't... Other than they're both comedies, I don't think these two movies are relatable. Or those two movies are relatable. But anyways. I'm not, and I'll say this until I die. Like, it's... Art is always subjective. Especially for what time you're living in. I don't want to not talk about it because then it's just sweeping it under the rug. But I do want to talk about it because it should be talked about.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get rid of it because you're not only getting rid of something John Landis directed, but you're getting rid of something that hundreds of people worked on and, you know, sweat and tears and I'm sure some sort of set maker like busted his thumb on set. So like if you get rid of it, you're getting rid of like what they worked hard on. It's the same thing with like, you know, people are like, oh, I don't listen to Michael Jackson because of all the kids. Like I get that, but the music's still there and it wasn't just him working on the music. Same with the Cosby Show. Same with, you know, watching House of Cards on Netflix. Like, I can't just get rid of this stuff.
I will say it's something different if somebody chooses to watch that because of those things.
Yes, absolutely.
That is a different story, though. That's a completely different thing.
I try not to hang out with those people, so I really haven't run into that.
Oh, man. So this is interesting. I, you know, every time that we do this, it's always nice to get that. And Chad, it's not often that you and I kind of had differing opinions on it, but I get that. I understand it, though. I know there's films that you love, you've seen since you were a kid, that I could care less about.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the... I used to hate that younger, being younger. Like, what, you haven't seen Star Wars? Or you hate Lord of the Rings, wife? Well, why don't we get divorced? Because this isn't worth it. Like, you can't live life like that. And you can't expect everybody to have the same, you know, nobody's the same. And, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. it's just not fair to others. And it's not fair to yourself to give expectations. Like I said earlier, I loved Evil Dead 2. Like, it's probably my favorite movie of all time. But I'm not going to recommend that movie to everybody. I'll recommend it to people that I, you know, get to know. And they're like, oh, yeah, I dig this. Like, oh, you like the first Spider-Man with Sam Raimi? You should check out Evil Dead 2. Because a lot of the jokes in Evil Dead 2 show up in that film. And I can point everyone. I'll even give you time codes on where those jokes are. So, this movie, it was one of those movies that, you know, everybody was pushed to see, I think. because of the lineage that followed. Because of your Van Wilders and your, you know, Revenge of the Nerds and trying to think of an obscure one. What's the one with Anna Faris and she dresses up like a bunny? I know that's
House,
a sorority
House
movie.
Bunny?
Yes! See? Without National Lampoon's Animal House, you would not have House Bunny. So.
But yeah, I just think, you know, like, any sort of college comedy, like, when you're that age, you watch college comedies because that's what you're supposed to. And this is what you think college, you know, college is supposed to be all toga parties. You get drunk all the time. I mean, how many people in their late teens, early 20s still act like those guys because that's how they picture college is supposed to be?
Yeah. I like the, we'll call it a subgenre, because it's not really a genre, but especially when you're in those formidable, like, frat movies come out, like, every year. There's a new one for every generation. Like, and everybody has, like, such a, like, a shiny veneer of, like, what college should be. And I think a lot of times these movies give us the experience that we wish we had or wish we might have in the future. You know, class isn't even brought up. You just, every night you're partying and getting drunk, getting laid, doing drugs. Like, fuck, man. Sounds great right now. being in a house with random people and doing all that. Come on.
Hugging people?
That's yeah! Right. Even high-fiving would be great right now.
So, as we all know, like, when a movie breaks ground, becomes, you know, it's like this groundbreaking movie. I know I just said the same thing twice, but we're going with it. there's often copycats, right? So, like, Star Wars came out, broke ground. There were suddenly other films that were similar to it.
Many Star of, Crash.
Yeah, many of them not as good. I would say
Star
all
Crash.
Of them good. So this film, Animal House, many feel was a ripoff, if not, you know, and to say it nice, it was homage to American Graffiti, another one of George Lucas's films.
Whatever.
Have you guys seen that?
American I've seen. Graffiti? Parts
I haven't
of it.
Actually.
Oh no. So maybe that's the film that you would see. Nope. Him. You'd be like, "Yeah, it was all right. I didn't like it though, guys."
Wait, is Harrison Ford in that?
Yes.
Yes.
And
okay, then I'm in. I like it already.
Carrie Fisher's in it. Ron Howard. It was
the
inspiration.
Then I definitely like it. Forget
it.
It's
the inspiration for Happy Days.
Yeah, I don't even have to see it. It's the best movie.
I mean, the posters are similar. Like, it looks like the same artist.
But it's the same sort of, like, you know, like, just a bunch of vignettes, a bunch of little stories that all come together. But again, it was kind of like the start of this new type of comedy, right? Like, that college-y. They take place, they're both movies that take place in the early 60s?
Yeah, 62. It says it right there. Where were you in 62?
So this film, so the dates are very important in this film, because in 1962, like, so that homecoming parade that ends the film is considered by many to be the last innocent day in America, because the next day is the day JFK was shot. So it's set up that way that you know, the film ends with all these hijinks happening and all that, and then after that, the country...
Shit, I didn't even make that connection. Holy shit.
Yeah, so both of the films kind of play on that, too. On that, you know, this is the loss of innocence happens after this.
Well, yeah, and, I mean, Vietnam was...
Vietnam...
I mean, we were in it, but we weren't at war.
Yeah, but it spiked up after he was killed, and...
Yeah. Huh. Man, I didn't even make that connection. That's such cool. All right, the movie's like 2% better because of that.
And the last piece of little bit of trivia that I'll share is that there was a planned sequel.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, there was a planned sequel that ended mostly because John Belushi had died, but partly because they just couldn't get everyone together. Because obviously there are some in this film that were obviously doing lots of things after it. some that weren't. But, yeah, it was going to be like a what's everybody doing now, like a reunion type of film. But because of, you know, they didn't want to do it after Belushi died. Which makes sense. All right, Chad?
Yes.
Okay, so Amy, you're our guest here. So this is the part where Chad, in 2 to 3 minutes, tries to give a synopsis of the film. I know we've just done all this talking about the film, you know, with the premise that everyone's watched it. So let's do the synopsis. Are you ready, Chad?
I guess.
Yeah, he can ask us for help. He can ask us for help if he needs it. But go, Chad.
Okay, so here's Animal House. It's 1962. We're at Faber College. Two new recruits are trying to find fraternities to join, and they end up at Delta House, which is the house with the rejects. But really, it's just all the cool guys that don't give a shit. And really, the movie just revolves around little vignette stories with each of those characters. And then at the end, they create havoc in the town parade, and they all graduate. The end.
That's one of your worst ones yet.
I feel like it's my best, because that's what the movie felt like.
You didn't mention anything about Kevin Bacon?
I mean, Kevin Bacon's in it, and then he gets trampled at the end, and he gets flattened out like a Looney Tune, like if a steamroller went over him. I mean, it's hard. Like, it follows the Deltas. They party. They create havoc. They kill a horse.
Well, do they? I mean, I know that the blanks in the gun caused the heart attack, but I'm guessing that horse, there were some problems going on with that horse.
Blanks can still kill people.
Well, he didn't even point the gun at the horse.
Yeah. The horse had pre-existing conditions. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And they didn't mean to do it, so...
I'm not
for animal cruelty, so, you know.
I have to say that just the that's the next scene in Dean Newman's office with the guy taking the tape measure, like all that going on in the background, is such a great scene.
Because
there's the conversation between the dean and the mayor.
Oh yeah,
going on.
And he just pulls,
I think it's
out
the mayor, or is it?
No, it's the mayor.
Okay.
Yep.
And just he's just looking at the door, measuring, and then pulls out the chainsaw as we cut. Oh, such a good scene.
It's... Listen, here's the plot of the movie. Kids in college get drunk, do drugs. They fight with each other with the other fraternity, and they're all a bunch of assholes to each other. That's the movie. And scene.
Okay, I still will have to say it's one of your worst. And this film... is better than many of them that are on our list that we've seen already. And some of them that were worse as far as what the hell was going on. You gave a better plot synopsis to Daisies. I'm just going to say it. I'm putting it out there. That was the worst film on the list so far.
I'd rather go watch Daisies again.
Really?
I mean, if you're going to tell me I got to watch this... Like, I don't know. Like, if it's one of those desert island situations, like, you can only have one movie that you absolutely hate to watch, probably take Daisies.
Well, yeah, that means that this movie is better than Daisies.
Yeah, but I want to subject myself to being alone on a deserted island with one movie and it's Daisies.
Well, yeah, but you said it was the worst movie.
Well, yeah, I can't pick a good movie.
Right.
I'm on a deserted island. I'm not having a good time.
Yeah.
So I need something to keep the depression level. So it's going to be Daisies.
So we're right. Okay. Okay, so we're right. We're good. All right.
I mean, what do you want? Who hasn't seen this movie besides me? Like, who needs a plot synopsis?
I don't know. I'm just saying. That's not good. That's all.
That's fine.
That's fine. All right. So if this film, and this is kind of weird because, you know, this film is looked back on, and like I said in the opening, you know, everything is the Animal House of whatever. But if you were given this script or told about this film, we're remaking the original Animal House. Would it work? What changes would you do? Amy, why don't we start with you?
No, it wouldn't work at all. You'd have to change everything. It'd be a totally different movie. There's so many things that you just can't do, and you probably shouldn't. I'm certainly not defending the racism, the sexism, you know, all of it that goes on in that movie. But that's, you know, it would be a totally different movie, so it would be politically correct, and
it'd be PCU.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I agree. I enjoy the film, not as much as this film.
Right.
But Chad, would you do? Would you focus on a sorority instead of a fraternity?
I would take this. No, I'm not going to do what I normally would do. I would take this script. I would rewrite it. I'd call Ryan Reynolds, and I would go to 2002 and make Van Wilder. Objectively a better movie. Or I'd make Road Trip. Or I'd make Accepted. Or Neighbors.
Yeah, again. All these are...
I have not seen any of those movies.
Well, you don't have to. You've seen this film.
Old School. I would make Old School. Old School is way better of a frat movie.
That's a pretty funny movie.
Yeah, and you know, I believe. Well, no, I don't think that film's on our list.
Or but. Sorority House Massacre. I'd make that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is the only college fraternity film that's on our list. We don't have any others. Any of those that you know are not on this list. So, I would agree with both of you. I think. You know, and when we get to Blazing Saddles, I think this question will be impossible to answer. Because there is a time and a place that films are made. When you look at them, and you know, with a critical eye of the modern times, yes, there's going to be some cultural issues, you know, racial issues, sexist issues, whatever. That there's going to be issues with film, and it doesn't matter what time you're looking at. But there was a time and a place where. For whatever reason, they were considered to be, you know, certain gags were considered to be funny, or entertaining, or expected. And I think I feel the college, you know, the same genre of comedy films have to play it safer. They can't do this anymore. They can't have that bar scene anymore where all the white women are picked up by the black men against their will. You know, or you know, so many other scenes in this film. They have to play it safer, but that's why they look back at Animal House and say, wow, that's the film. Let's make our version of that and make it Harold and Kumar go to White Castle or make it, you know, whatever it is with a bunch of short vignettes, a little adventures with a you know, high, very thin arc going across the story.
I don't think it's necessarily play it safer, because comedy isn't supposed to be safe, but, like, you can be smarter with it. And, this doesn't fix the scene, but in my head, when the guys came up, the black men came up and asked to dance with the dates, I thought it was finally going to be like, oh, we're going to start treating everybody like human beings, and the girls are going to dance with them, and we're all going to, like, chill the fuck out. Because it's just a bar with black people in it. but it didn't happen. So, in an alternate universe where it did happen, feel like it's more acceptable to have a scene where a bunch of white dudes walk in a bar and they're uneasy because they grew up white and they don't know shit. And then they, you know, learn through the course of that scene that, you know, we're all just people, man. But it didn't happen. So no. There are ways to, again, it, just be smarter about it. Don't be safer. Because safe comedy is boring. Like, really boring. It's not even comedy anymore.
Yeah. And I will agree, safer is probably the wrong word to use. But, you know, but it's, you know, appropriate or, you know, whatever the term.
Listen, quit being a cuck, okay? God.
I hate that word. All right. So, Chad, why don't we go to you first? So
okay.
We end in a more positive note.
Ouch.
Final thoughts on this film? Would you recommend it?
I mean, who am I going to recommend it to? And I know this isn't the question you're asking, but I'm gonna take my 13 minutes here. Who would I recommend it to that really hasn't seen it already? And even so, I feel like some people are still going to like it, even seeing it fresh out of the box now. So I'll recommend it on the merits of what came after it and all of the people that were in it. And there are certain scenes that are great and memorable. But no, I'm not going to recommend it.
All right. What about you, Amy? Any final thoughts on Animal House? And would you recommend it?
I mean, I would recommend it to certain people. I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. But, I mean, I still like the movie, even with all its faults. Like I said, it could be nostalgia. It makes me laugh. Not every scene, but a lot of them. And, yeah, it's just a movie I grew up with, and I enjoy it. So there's definitely people I would recommend it to.
Yeah, I am with you, Amy. I'm leaving this on positive. I still enjoyed the film. Yes, it's not a perfect film. There are some issues with it. And, like you, Amy, seeing it mostly on television, though a lot of those scenes aren't present.
Right.
You know, so maybe that's the version everyone should watch, is the television one. It's less uncomfortable.
Right. That's a good point.
But then you don't get the standard 80s comedy nudity in it.
That's true.
So, well, before we say goodbye, I will say our next film, on this, well, actually, first, I want to say thank you.
Don't know why this is on this list.
Yeah, but so first, thank you, Amy, very much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I do want to promote. So you are, thank you for coming to a different genre than what you're used to. You yes. are a horror film guru, I would say. You're one of the biggest horror film fans I know. And you have another podcast, Terror with the Twist of Limes?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that podcast.
It's my friend Limes and I, and we just talk about horror movies. Or actually, our last show was about what got us into horror. You know, things as a kid or, you know, things like that. Sometimes we talk about where you can find horror outside of the horror genre. Things like that. So it's definitely a horror centric podcast. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. So it's on Blogspot Radio, I think it's called. I don't even know. So
I'll try to put a link in the description to it. So again, thank you very much.
Anytime.
Great. Yeah, we have, you know, 46 more films to go. And our next comedy, again, this is BBC, so this is British people determining the comedies, Chad, is from 1994. We have probably the second oddest director on this list so far, Quentin Tarantino. Pulp Fiction. Amy, would you consider Pulp Fiction a comedy?
It definitely has comedic elements. I mean, not all of it's a comedy, that's for sure. Yeah. But you do laugh at some things, absolutely.
But I mean, like, yeah.
A dark comedy? Sure.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
The Gimp sleeping.
Was that?
The Gimp sleeping.
Yeah. I think
that's super funny.
There you go. Yeah.
Between seeing, when I first saw this list and saw Quentin Tarantino and then Martin Scorsese for the King of Comedy, I'm like, oh boy. So this will be Quentin Tarantino is number 46 on our list. So that will be our next show. So,
just one thing. Yeah. They consider Pulp Fiction funnier than Animal House.
By one point, yes.
Wow. That I don't understand.
No, I don't understand it so high on those lists. Yeah, I mean, I could see, hey, you know, Quentin Tarantino, he's a big director. Let's make sure he's on here. There are, you know, I think as we go up through the top 40, there'll be a couple questions, but for the most part, they look top notch. So we haven't even gotten a Mel Brooks film yet. We're going to get a number of those, so.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But yeah, why this is here, I don't know. So, thank you again, Amy. Check out the podcast, Terror with a Twist of Limes. Chad, it's always a pleasure. For me, anyway.
Likewise.
I guess not for you. I just gave that awkward pause. I'm like, okay, maybe he.
Yeah, I wanted it to be dramatic, like Pulp Fiction.
Ah. And then remember, as we always say, Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it. Thank you, everybody.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.